Well, hello, folks, and thanks for tuning in for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. If I've done my math right, it's a spooky Halloween edition. Whoa! This episode should be coming out on Tuesday, October 31st. So if it does, great. If not, just another thing you can email Jim at rec.poker about and give me the gears over screwing up the episode order. But we have a scary scenario to discuss here on the show tonight. As you know, Chris Jones manages our themes of the month. And we're going to talk about some themes of the month that are coming up for October and November. But first, I have to introduce myself. I'm Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter and Threads, I suppose. And I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And I have to thank the other members of the Wrecking Crew, because I am just one guy that they give the mic on Mondays. But it takes a village, a gang, a group, a crew to make the magic happen here at Rec Poker. And if you want to find out more about me or the other members of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew or just open up your big scary ear holes, because you're about to hear from two of our wonderful members right here tonight on the show.
Well, I am Chris Jones, and I just added Blue Sky to my repertoire, so I'm now 5B5 on... I might have to steal Rob's line. I'm 5B5 just about everywhere.
And I'm Rob Washam, and I'm Rabman 50 just about everywhere.
And in Simpsons tradition, it's Chris Spooky Jones and Rob Deadman Washam here on Halloween. What? I'm Jim the Corpse Reed.
Thank What's you your favorite for... Halloween candy, Jim?
Oh, I mean, I just like little chocolate bars. I'm a sucker for like the little bite-sized Snickers or Mars bars. Those are probably my go-to. But there's no wrong answer. I just want like a pillowcase full of chocolate is what I want. What about you, Chris? What's your favorite?
Oh, I think a Twix bar is always like the prize in the bag for me.
Rob, when they were inventing Halloween when you were a kid, how'd that go for you?
Well, it was usually, you know, homemade candy that it was like a toffee, and they'd wrap it in like parchment paper and twist the ends, and that's what they'd give you, because, you know, they didn't have all that fancy candy yet. They didn't package anything. I mean,
yeah, it's been a while since I went trick-or-treating, but it was a good time. The pillow slip, that was a real game changer for me, bringing the pillow slip around, because you can have another one of those tucked in your back pocket. You like, you know, there's a lot of options open up to you there.
Yeah, indeed.
Today's kids don't know anything about how trick-or-treating was back in the late 50s, early 60s.
Well, they're missing out. They don't make them like that anymore. Thanks for tuning in tonight, folks, and I hope everyone had a great time taking their little ones out and terrorizing the neighborhood. We're going to terrorize you a little bit here, talking about tournament stages and particularly approaching that most frightening of tournament times, the bubble. Chris, every month at Rec Poker, you have a different theme of the month. And right now, rolling through the end of the year, we're looking at different tournament stages each month. We started early, we'll finish at the final table. But right now, we're kind of getting to the bubble and talking about bubble play a little bit. Why don't you take it from there and drop some knowledge bombs on our audience?
So October, which we're just ending, but if you're interested, you can always go back. If you just join us as a premium member, you can go back and watch any of the deep dives, which is really good for you. Because we have a lot of content there, and there's some really good ones. We've had some good conversations, but anyway,
no, hold on. Let's just talk about that for a second. Yeah. Cause Chris has been doing a monthly seminar for like 4 years now, 3 years. And they used to be called the monthly seminar. Now they're called the deep dive. But there are a wealth of, really well put together, curriculum-based studies on how to improve various parts of your poker game. It's all part of being a premium member here at rec.poker. It's just the tip of the iceberg, but on Halloween, that would be a treat for anybody use the code RECPOKER to get your first month for only $5 and go scrolling back through the deep dives. And you can see the wealth of information. You couldn't fit all that in a pillow slip, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, you'd need a really big pillow slip.
Huge.
But for October, we were talking about that sort of the stage where we've exited the early stage of the tournament. We're kind of getting past the registration period, sort of what I call the shoot, which is sort of like where we all start trying to eliminate people, getting down to the bubble. And in November, we're going to be talking about when we get closer to the bubble and actually approaching the bubble and then playing in that immediate aftermath of the bubble bursting. And one of the things I think that I talked about this in the October seminar is that sort of middle ground period, the period between the early stages and between where we're really closing in on the bubble, is there's two things about that I think everybody, you can go watch the thing and get really in depth, then we'll look at some hands and look in some spots and we'll talk about what this specifically means. But I think there's two really specific things of what that means to you as a poker player. The first is that we are trying to figure out a way to compound our advantage as we approach the bubble. And this is the period where we are trying to accumulate chips as much as possible. So A, we are okay with busting here. In fact, this is the period of the tournament where we were going to bust the most often, and that's okay. And so one of the things that I have labeled this in the seminar is that we need to embrace the chaos. This is early in the tournament. We want to kind of like, chips aren't worth as much. Even though we all have 100 big blinds, and then if we double up in the first hand of the tournament, suddenly we have like 200 big blinds, and it feels like we have more chips than anyone could ever do anything with, right? But by the time we reach this period, that double up is sort of almost meaningless. Whereas double ups in this period, as we're approaching the bubble, are massive. They're huge, and we want to embrace that volatility. We want to embrace the chaos of these spots. So that's a big part there. And then the flip side of that is as we get closer and closer to the bubble, our incentives start to change. And that's why we want to accumulate these chips in that part of the tournament, because it's going to vary depending on how big our stack is, what our incentives are as we approach the bubble, and how we can approach those spots and what kind of strategies we can employ. Because when we're short stacked approaching the bubble, we may just be in survival mode. And when we're deep stacked approaching the bubble, it's really a nice spot to be in.
In fact, Chris, I think if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that having a big stack approaching the bubble is so valuable that we should tailor our aggression or our risk aversion earlier so that we can put ourselves in that position as often as possible, even if it means busting the tournament before the bubble comes.
Right.
Okay, so working back, please.
I was just going to say that's very interesting, because as rec players playing in our daily tournaments at the casino, one of the things you want to do is you want to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it so often, and I'm definitely guilty of this myself. I'm sure all of us are, where we start out in a tournament and we play fairly tight in the beginning. We want to outlast the people that are giving their chips away for free. Maybe take advantage of that a little bit, but take advantage of the even lesser studied players. But then you get to that accumulation point, and the blinds are so high compared to your chip stack now, and you just feel this pressure. of you could bust at any time.
Yep.
You know, you don't have that pressure at the beginning so much, but now you have that pressure. And I think a lot of recreational players succumb to that pressure, and they tighten up even farther.
Yes.
And then they just start, their chips just start going down and down and down. So by the time they hit a bubble, if they even get there, they're definitely short stack.
Yeah. And what I talked about this in the deep dive, is that the only part I might slightly disagree with you about is that I think that when like a just pure kind of recreational, unstudied player approaches the tournament stages. I think in the early stages, they actually don't even approach it tight. They approach it like, I got mountains. Let's see a flop. Let's play loose. This is great. And then as their chips start to dwindle, as the blinds start to go up, they're like, oh, I might not survive this. I'm going to tighten up. And so they're actually playing an unstudied recreational player is playing the opposite of ideal. And we, if you study, can very much take advantage of that dynamic. When they're playing loose and throwing chips around in that early stages where chips don't matter as much, we should be tighter. And when they're tightening up and we can recognize those players that are starting to like be like, ugh, I would like to cash this. Those are the players we can just start hammering with aggression. So that dynamic that you're noticing is sort of also key because they're actually playing counter to what their incentives are.
And I'm really glad that you mentioned countering it with aggression and not just by widening it, our own ranges and playing more loosely and passively, because that's not the opposite of what they are playing.
Right.
You want to be applying pressure, and you can do it in semi-bluff spots, and you can do it with, you know, non-premium hands, but you don't want to be just taking chances by calling. Right. You want to be expressing that through aggressive actions. And I think, you know, a lot of us do some coaching through our membership here. And a lot of the people that I see, they're cashing at a high rate and they're losing players because they're getting to the bubble with tiny stacks and then they can do nothing with them when they get there.
Yep.
And maybe they're cashing at 20, 25%, 30% of the time, but they're not winning players because they're never making more than a double up and they're not cashing half the time. And if you're only doubling your money and you're doing it less than half the time, that's not a winning strategy. So you have to get past the bubble with some chips, get to the bubble with a stack that applies some pressure then. And that means taking more chances before you make the money, which is, as you guys point out, kind of not a comfortable position for
record. Yeah, it really isn't. Because I think it also goes a little bit counter to as recreational players. Now, again, and there's no judgment on this because, like, I think we can play poker however we want to play. We can play our stack however we want to play. If we come to the game, whether it's online or the casino or whatever, and it's Friday night, we've had a hard week, we want to play some poker and we don't want to leave 2 hours after we got there, like, that's cool. Like, play that way. Like, I'm not trying to say like there's anything wrong with that. But if you want to actually try to win the most money and you want to try to win poker tournaments, you're going to have to exit in that shorter time frame more often than you're probably comfortable with. And sometimes you're going to have a short Friday night, go play some cash or go see a movie or go on a date with your significant other or do something. That's cool. Because there is nothing like having that big stack approaching the bubble. It's just free chips that everyone has to give you.
What Jim was saying is don't focus on caches. Focus on ROI.
Right.
So it's not how often you cash. It's, are you cashing for more than you're spending? And if you're doing that, then you're probably working the accumulation phase pretty well.
Right.
And I want to say, like, this is one of the ways that tournament poker is its own art form, is these non-intuitive aspects of strategy, where like this meta strategy that we're talking about here, it's less about how to play ace king under the gun, and it's more about how to approach applying pressure against the other players there. And like Chris says, some of the time you're gonna flip and lose, and sometimes, like, that's part of it. And if the idea of driving to the casino and playing for 45 minutes or 2 hours and then losing doesn't appeal to you, then, I mean, examine that. because that's a big part of tournament poker, specifically MTTs, like multi-table tournaments, large field tournaments. It's mostly an experience of losing before you get to the money. And I'll just put in my weekly reminder that cash tables exist. And if you want to just go and play and know that you can play for a few hours or 5 hours or 6 hours or whatever, maybe go play a cash game. Or be open to the idea of jumping into the cash game if you do bust early. Because if you're not prepared to take those flips in this stage of the tournament that we're talking about, you're probably not going to do very well in tournaments in the long run, because you need to be in a position to apply pressure later. You need a big stack later in the tournament in order to more reliably get to the final table and get to the top three where all the money is. And if you're only ever going to be nursing a little stack from sure thing to sure thing, it's a fun way to pass some time, but it's going to be very difficult for you to be a profitable tournament.
And so we won't go into it here, but in the deep dive, we talk about what that means for us pre-flop, what that means for us post-flop. I think there's even some counterintuitive things in there in terms of, like, sometimes actually, I will just counter one thing that you sometimes, and this one I hesitate to tell recreational players because they think it gives them, like, just
too much license,
blanket permission to do this everywhere. But we actually can, from the button, when we're embracing volatility, we can flat more. We can flat more being in position with certain kinds of holdings when we are trying to embrace the idea of kind of accumulating chips and embracing volatility, because it actually does increase some volatility in certain spots when we actually flat in some spots. So,
but if you want to know what spots, you have to go watch the deep dive from Chris. Drop that $5, give Rec Poker Premium membership a try this month by using the code Rec Poker at checkout and get your first month for only $5. Because we're going to tease some information here on the show like we do, but the real goods, I mean, you got to come and watch some of these seminars that Chris puts together. There's some amazing insights in there that you can use to immediately increase your ROI and benefit your experience as a tournament player.
So Chris, I want to ask Chris one question. Now that I'm in the accumulation phase and I've accumulated a very nice stack, I'm sitting there getting close to the bubble. I have 50 or 60 big blinds, so I'm in pretty good shape compared to the rest of the field. Now what do I do?
All right, because that's what we're going to be talking about in November, right? Now we're talking about, okay, so we've mission accomplished. We're not in that, like, 15 to 20 big blind. Oh, God, I just hope some people start busting because I've got to go home. But what we have when we have that, like, 60 big blind stack in this situation, we have the power to threaten most people's tournament life in a phase when they all have that sort of, like, I want to survive sort of feeling. It means that we can invest. That means that we can open small almost exclusively to, like, sort of a min open. And it puts an enormous amount of pressure on our opponents. It means we can pick our spots to call off when they shove against us. It doesn't mean that we start, like, wildly just because we have the big stack and we're like, I'm the big stack bully. I'm supposed to da 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 da. That I sometimes see people misinterpret that to mean, like, you're not supposed to mess with me because I'm the big stack bully. You just shoved your 15 big blind stack on me. I'm going to call off with 9-8 of hearts, you know, like, no, fold, you know, like, we want to be smart with our big stack, and we want to not be necessarily calling off except when we have premiums, but we want to be applying a lot of pressure, and we can do that with small opens and particularly small three bets. We can put if you're thinking about these 15 big blind stacks, right? We can put an enormous amount of pressure with the smallest of three bets. We don't have to threaten their entire stack. I mean, if they've got 15 big blinds, they open to two, and we three bet to, like, five, four and a half sometimes, that's still life-threatening to them. And they have to respect it. And the amount of folds that you get with that is immense. it's immense. I mean, if you're not used to being in this position, and you're like, well, can I really do this? Yes, you really can. And will they really fold? Yes, they really will.
They will.
Because people are aware. They're like, oh, I'm 10 away from this, and I'd really like to cash it. The dynamic really starts to work in our favor, and that starts to snowball for us because we can invest small amounts and fold when it's doesn't make any sense and get away from hands where we still have this big stack, but we can accumulate chips. And sometimes we get to call off when they shove with their 15 big blinds because we got kings or aces or whatever. And now our stack's just going up even more. And it's a really, really beautiful spot to be in.
Good answer.
I love playing bubble poker with a big stack. It's just, there's nothing like it. It's just sweet, sweet.
So it sounds like it's a position that allows you to kind of over realize your equity, and so conversely, then there must be other positions where that's not the case. So let's talk a little bit about playing leading up to the bubble, not as the big stack and then also as the medium stack and as the small stack. And we don't need to get into too much detail because we've already released a lot of information in this podcast, but leading up as the big stack, that's where you want to be. You get to apply a lot of pressure. You can threaten everybody. And I think people don't appreciate how many chips you can pick up just by making small aggressive actions. And that becomes really important later. Like chipping up is itself a very valuable experience at this point. Who's under more pressure then, the medium stacks or the short stacks, and how do they play differently? Again, just in the very abstract, like I think a lot of the short stack players, some of them are going to be the kinds that are just going to hang on and fold everything and make the money for a min cash and get out. But we, you know, some of them are going to try and double up and triple up and get here to the next one. Can you talk a little bit about those other stack sizes to kind of how that like what are their incentives, I guess, is maybe a way into this
thing. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's the, like the ICM incentives, which I think you're speaking to there in terms of like the players with more to lose are those medium sized stacks. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that have put themselves in a position where they should cash. And therefore, if they don't cash, something has gone awry. And they're the ones that have to be more cautious. Now, if you're up against one of those like a short stack player that you just see, they're just trying to fold their way into the money. This isn't quite the ICM model, but I would say they're under the most enormous pressure of anybody. Mm-hmm. Because if your single strategy is, I want to cash this tournament, and you're folding pretty much everything, well, now whatever stack you're at, you can just, if you, provided you cover them, you can just bet at them and take their chips. So if you see that, that's a sort of slightly different dynamic. But most of the time, those medium stack players have to sort of like navigate this period carefully. They can't go as crazy as the big stack unless the big stack is folded. Then they become sort of the big stack at the table, right? If they're sort of like, there's a bunch of 10 big blinds, they have 30 and the big stack has 70 and the big stack folds. Well, now they have a different sort of capability and a different sort of position at the table than they do if they have to worry about that big stack.
There's one thing too about the short stacks. And you mentioned the guy that just is trying to eke into the money. And he's not going to play anything. He's going to fold everything. Right. So there is the other advantage that the small stack has over the medium stack, because the small stack has the ability to put a lot of pressure on the medium stack that he can't put on the big stack.
Right.
Because if you're sitting there with 10 to 15 big blinds and the medium stack is sitting there with 30, you can swap positions quickly. Yep. Really quickly. So it puts a lot of pressure on the medium stack to not give away his stack. So again, as a smaller stack, you can put those jamming in that rejam over the top of a medium player that you can't really get away with on the big player or
yeah,
the
for
big
sure.
chip stack.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a great point, Rob, because that's that is part of why that middle stacks are in the the tough position they're in, because they can't go after the big stack, and they can't quite go after those short stacks as much. So they're they can be in a really tough spot. And the last thing I'll say about this is, from a short stack perspective, if we're outside, let's say we're in a tournament that pays 100 people, whatever, and there's like 120 left, and we're 115 out of 120, right? We're already outside of the money. We're already likely going to be in a position. I mean, we want to play our best, but you know, we're going to have to take some spots, and we're going to have to risk some chips. We can't likely just fold our way into the money. I mean, it's possible. It's possible. I've seen it happen, but we are likely going to want to find, and that's where it's really important to understand when you have those short stacks. One of the most key things to study is to understand how to play a 10 to 15 big blind stack. Like, what do I do with this? And when do I open it? When do I shove it? When do I, you know, I'm actually starting to try to learn a little bit about when do I limp it. It's not something I've ever really employed into my game, but I am trying to like figure that out as well. Because it's monumentally important to this period of the tournament.
And for one thing I'll say there is, I think a lot of people get in their mind when they get down to that 10 to 15 big blind stack that it's either all in or full.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it really isn't. I mean, there's a lot of places where you can open. You can open on the button and people will fold.
Yep.
And so you can get those chips. There's not a lot of them, but when you're that, it's a big proportion of your stack because you're so short. And people will fold it. It doesn't mean you have to go in all in. There are other strategies that you can use. And I'm finding it's very effective in some of the smaller stakes tournaments that I play online.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazingly effective because, again, the other short stacks, they're just trying to get in the money.
Right. Right.
And they're not going to take a chance unless they have a hand. And if somebody comes over the top of you, if you don't have a real hand, you just fold and you haven't lost that much.
Yeah, this feels like the part of the tournament where bet folding becomes really important. Like having recreational players are less used to having an aggressive range that includes a folding range to previous to future action. And this is a spot where you want to apply pressure with small bets and raises. And when they push back, you can just release. Like most of the time, they're not going to, because they're overfolding, because they're feeling this pressure. So you can apply a lot of pressure with small bets and raises. And then you need to get comfortable doing it with hands that you will fold when they push back. And that opens up a whole different part of your range, that if you're only ever making aggressive actions with strong hands that you're planning to continue with, your aggressive actions are way too tight and strong,
right? And the other thing I'll add to that is, you also have to get, let's say you have 12 big blinds, like you have to. So I really like having an opening range there, or maybe a limping range. That part, get back to me in a little bit.
Yeah.
But part of that is that you also have to get comfortable with doing that with like kings, queens, those kinds of holdings. And I see so many players being like, yeah, but I don't want to do it with, you know, kings and see an ace on the flop or whatever. You have to remember, we're at a point in the tournament where we're really trying to accumulate some chips. And when we shove 12 big blinds with kings and everybody folds, that's not as great a scenario. I mean, it's okay, it's fine, but we could have done that with ace three offsuit, you know, like, I mean, like,
or you could have done it with a normal raise.
Right. Right.
You don't have to jam.
Yeah. Right. True. That's what I'm. True. That's my point. Is like,
right.
And when those times Jim was just talking about, where we sometimes have to raise fold, well, now we have stuff in our holdings where we can raise call, and be dominating against a lot of what they're shoving into us. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty good too.
So one thing I wanted to mention before we go, Chris, you talked about your relative position at the table. If you are to the left of the big stack, then you get to act after they do. And when they're not in the hand, if you have the next biggest stack, well, guess what, kid? You've been promoted to big stack. Because what matters is who left to act covers who.
Yep.
So if you have a big stack to your left, that's also really going to impact your role at the table. And you have to tighten up a lot more than if that big stack is to your right.
Because we were just talking about when you have that big stack, how fun it is to apply pressure against people. Well, if you have that right to your left, guess who they're going to apply the most pressure to?
Yes.
It's you.
Yes.
And so now you have to play accordingly.
And so I guess my last question to the group here is, we talk about having a big stack. We've talked about that very generally. How important is it that our stack is big relative to the field versus relative to the other people at our table? Because when we're in, you know, multi-table tournaments, the big stack at the table might be different, you know, from table to table. And your stack might feel big because it's the big stack at your table, but it's actually a average stack in the tournament, or vice versa. You could be at a very deep table or a very shallow table, and that might affect the relative size of your stack to the table. How important is it relative to the field versus relative to the table?
It's important, but not as important as the table dynamic. Like we talked about wanting to try to build a stack. I mean, part of what we're doing here is we're accumulating chips so that when we get into that post-bubble bonanza, we can start to continue to accumulate chips and build our way to a final table. And ultimately, of course, we want to have and compete with the people who have large stacks. So it's kind of important, but if we cover folks at our table by a significant degree and we're like middle of the road, but we just have a bunch of shorties at our table, cool. I'm going to apply a lot of pressure.
Yep.
And that what you're doing there is you're kind of evening the field a little bit, because you have the ability now to accumulate chips at your table to kind of catch up to those other guys. Mm-hmm. So,
and you never know.
100%. It's more about how many more chips you have at your table and not as much against the field.
Yeah. And you never know when your table is going to break. You know, once people start getting eliminated, the tables break a little more often, a little more frequently. And you might end up at a table where, even though you were the big stack at table A, that table breaks. Now you're a medium stack or even a short stack at a deeper table. And the players that are remaining are chipping up themselves. So the relative stacks are getting bigger and bigger as well. So you have to be doing better than treading water here to keep up.
Yep.
Personally, I mean, I pay attention to the lobby when I'm playing online.
Yep.
And what like the average chip stack is in the tournament. But it's much more about when are we getting short enough that we have to start shoving. And it's a lot less about applying pressure, because you can only apply pressure against the players at your table, but you can compete for the bubble against everybody else in the tournament. So like once you get shorter and shorter and shorter, the other players on other tables matter more to you. But when you're not in that bottom portion of the field, it really is mostly irrelevant, and you should really just focus on who's at your table.
Yeah. One of the things, I don't know if you do this, when I look at the lobby, I really don't care much about the average chips, but the thing that I will often look at is, okay, let's say there's 100 players being paid, and the player who's currently in 100th has 12 big blinds, right? That is interesting information to me, because now I know where the line is, and like I can compare that to what my stack is, what other stacks are, and where is that bubble moving? Okay, it's at the 10, you know, levels, blinds just went up. So now that bubble cutoff is at the 10 big blinds. Now it's at 8. And that is really interesting and relevant information. I think it's that's one that I think is helpful to look at because it gives you a relative sense of where you're at, how much sort of a dynamic you have.
Yeah, I like that a lot because you can use that against the players at your table that are below that range or above that range because they'll be feeling different amounts of pressure. If they're paying attention,
right. And they're paying attention.
Yeah. Let's just reinforce this rule that you can only apply pressure to people who are aware of the pressure that you're bringing onto them. So,
right.
So player type well, because some of these players, you're like, oh, well, they have to fold, 98% of hands there. No, they just should.
Right.
And poker is one of those games where they can make a big mistake that costs you almost as much as it costs them. So
I will say this is the bubble is unlike other ICM pressure, I think, in terms of even like amateur, like completely unstudied or maybe just like pushing button types players. When it's like 10 left, most players are going to be aware that we're getting close to the money and they'll intuitively or instinctively understand that I don't really want to bust here.
Right.
And so I'm going to tighten up a little. So like, even though they might not have all the words to put to it why they're doing it, there is, I think, that I don't think happens when you get like approaching a final table. If somebody's like completely just a wild card, kind of unstudied, just I think they're just playing poker. But like, as you approach a bubble, I do think there is a dynamic because the idea of getting no money versus some money is more powerful than getting like pay jumps.
Now, what you really want are people that are opening at a normal frequency. And then once you raise them, then they're like, oh, damn, the bubble's coming.
Yeah.
It's like, so don't be that player. That's the one point I want to reinforce to folks here. Like, think about this from the moment you dealt your cards. Don't be like, oh, the bubble's coming, but I can still open, 8 jack suited here, because you can't and save those two big blinds because you're going to have to fold. And now all you've done is just, give away some chips that you really want to have in that,
it's like giving away another level almost, because that's
right.
That's the small blind and the big blind, right?
Yep.
Well, this is really good stuff, man. I always enjoy these conversations about the deep dive because I love getting into that Chris Jones poker brain. What else? Is there anything else that we should cover here, folks? Or just tell folks, go drop the $5, get your first month of premium membership at Rec Poker by using the code Rec Poker at checkout, and look behind the curtain, see all the amazing stuff we've got there. More treats than tricks, I like to think, to bring us back to the Halloween theme here. But we could probably find a couple tricks in there somewhere if that's going to keep you interested. Thank you to Chris and to Rob for putting this stuff together here. Thank you, of course, to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Spooky Casino. And thanks to our premium members, our Wrecking Crew members, and you, the listeners. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks for your support, and have a fantastic Halloween!